Welcome to After Hours at the Book Club. It's a podcast that's a collaboration between KGNU Radio and the Boulder Bookstore. And it's an addendum, I suppose, to our regular book club segment. And we invite our featured authors to come in and talk a little bit more about their book and the writing process and maybe a little bit lighter subject matter. This month we've been reading Kevin Wolfe's The Home Place, which is a mystery set in a small town on the Colorado Plains. And Kevin, we talked a lot about the writing process in the book club, but what feedback are you getting, particularly from people who are in these type of towns? Because I think particularly now, maybe in our political environment, there's maybe some sensitivity about writing about people in rural areas, particularly if, you know, liberal urban dwelling folk have preconceived ideas about what these towns are like. I mean, was that a consideration when you were writing, or are you getting any feedback?
It was not a consideration. I didn't guard myself or try to, you know, purposely, you know, to do anything that on that political. There's a character in the book, that Ray Ray, who is a he's a hermit, he's a bit of a survivalist, and I think Ray Ray was just born 150 years too late. He should have been a buffalo hunter or a cowboy on a cattle drive across the plains, but he's stuck in there, and he's a character that just wants to be left alone. Somebody, I think it was you earlier, said who would he voted for, and I think we decided he just wouldn't have voted because he just wants to be left alone and run his life. Interestingly, his character was modeled after, I was down at my my relative's property, and it was a fall of the year, and we were actually antelope hunting, and we stopped by an uncle's place, shirt-tail relative, however they were down there. And it was the time of year where they were cutting silage, and silage is when they cut up crop to feed their cattle through the winter. And they help each other. You know, one farmer, they'll come over for a day and help him chop silage, and he'll go over there. And they introduced me to this guy, and his name was Ray. And he says, "Hi, I'm Ray." And he looked at me and goes, "I live in a teepee." And as we were driving around the county, we found him where he was living in a teepee. And his parents had a place, and I think he'd been in the military and came back and now was living in a teepee. And he's since disappeared from down there. But he was kind of the inspiration for a guy that was just maybe just didn't – he made his own rules and fit in where he was going to be.
There's a real nice – and I don't know if it's an inner dialogue, if he actually verbalizes it, where Ray, he's just – saying, the government, just leave me alone.
He
feels like he's being hunted. It's actually a kind of a misunderstanding, because he thinks they're after him for hunting without a license, where really they want to question him about these three murders that have happened in the county, but he doesn't know anything about that. But he feels this persecution on the part of government agencies.
And, you know, I think we saw that up in Oregon with that group on the... what's the guy's that Clyde Bundy?
Bundy
character, a little bit so up in North Dakota on the pipeline thing, where people just want to run their own lives and see the government interference. And if you play around on YouTube, you can find some of those guys. and I have.
Well, you know, Ray can, for the most part, live the life he wants to live in an area like Eastern Colorado, where it's very small town, and he can be kind of left alone, or like you said, in real life, this guy could live in a teepee. But I think of when people like this end up in an urban community, there's really nowhere to go. I mean, there's a camping ban in Boulder and camping ban in Denver, and we are really trying to hem people in who might be like Ray Ray in these areas.
Well, yeah, and is it the right thing to do? Yeah. My wife and I'm going to jump subjects here, but last night we watched, there was the Channel 6 broadcast on the Big Thompson flood. And we go to Estes Park several times a year, so we're familiar with that. And at the end, one of the people, you know, after the flood, they put in the restrictions on how close to the river you could build and the flood stuff. And somebody said, you know, it's my property, and if I want to build a house so I can enjoy this river, I don't know why the government should stop me. And you go, well, really, why should they? And then my wife said, because the next flood, your house is going to float down the river, dam up, hit a bridge, take out the bridge, dam the river up, and make the flood worse. So I think, you know, there's those considerations. But, yeah, it's I kind of want to be left alone sometimes.
I mean, I found it interesting reading it. As you said, you didn't have any political issues in your mind at all when you were writing it, but it really was quite a reminder to me when you live in a place like Boulder, Colorado, that is a very liberal town. And then there are other places in the exact same state that are very authentically Coloradan, where people would have, I'm sure, a completely different political opinion. We've seen, of course, this play out at the ballot box. I mean, that was kind of at the back of my head a little bit when I was reading the book. But just certainly when Ray Ray, that's a particular character, the hermit, as you described, he really just wants to be left alone. And he talks about that in the book. Leave me alone, state government, federal government, everybody. Just leave me alone and get on with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I wanted to know, just to change the subject at this point, I wanted to see... No, what kind of mystery authors or Colorado authors, like who were your models or templates or people you just enjoyed that led you to write something like this?
When I started, I wanted to be a writer, and it's been about 10 or 12 years that I've really been working on the craft. That kind of ruined reading for me. You get very analytical about your reading, but there's a couple of authors that I that I read for enjoyment. First is Margaret Cole, and I just read her last book in her series. Currently, I'm about halfway through Nevada Barr's last book, and I always read the C.J. Box and his Joe Pickett stuff. I really enjoy that, and I think that the Western themes there, and I think anything that I'm going to write, just because of who I am and where I've grown up and my worldview, that it's always going to have some Western themes, that there's always going to be a stranger back in town, kind of thing. In between, I just read that book. It's called Inga, the woman who was JFK's mistress prior to World War. It's a nonfiction book. Huh. So it's very fast. It's one of those you couldn't make up this story. But that's the kind of stuff to read. I find myself now that I'm meeting other authors and picking up their books and stuff like that. So I'm reading. I just read something by Christine Carbo. She writes a series that happens in Glacier National Park. There's Mark Stevens, a local author here, that writes a series about a woman who is a hunting guide in the Flat Top Wilderness. And I think he's on his fourth book now, and stuff I enjoy. I pick up a book now that I start reading, and I'm not quite engaged. Then that's when I get analytical. I said, why am I not wanting to turn to the next page and try to learn from it as I go?
And of course, Kent Haroff. I mean, when I was reading this, I couldn't help but think of Kent Haroff.
Thank you.
Small town Colorado, very well fleshed out characters, really driving the story forward. And I know the comparison has been made as well.
There's been several people that, because of the Eastern Plains and because of so much of the place. They're different books, very much different books. I think that Ken's books are certainly more serene.
You have a few more dead bodies.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's the question I have. You know, on some of these places, like Greg Johnson has this mystery series set in Wyoming, Longmire.
Yeah.
And I always wonder with these, you have this great setting, like you have these Eastern Plains and a very small town, but if you start writing book after book, how many murders can a small area withstand? Like you've already got, I think we have four dead bodies. Well, by the time that's over, I don't want to give away the ending, but you have more than that. How many deaths can you have in a small town that only has 500 people?
Well, think about Cabot Cove. If this goes forward, I can't see me continuing. The town would not have anybody left, but murders are they're not common in those little towns in Eastern Plains. Certainly they happen. I think there's one part in the story where the deputy sheriff is looking at the kid's dead body and says, hey, kids don't get murdered in this county. They die in a traffic wreck, or maybe a farm tractor turns over. This isn't just what happens. So I think I'm, you know, I don't know whether we can make this small town. Maybe Chase has got to go someplace.
Well, are you very attached to the murder mystery genre? And I suppose this is maybe a bad thing to say to a murder mystery writer. What I loved about the book were the characters and the backstory and the intersection. In many ways, the murders were a way to bring them all together.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have been just as happy just reading about all of these folks. Maybe you could just have a book and nobody dies.
In fact, if you open the blurb at the top cover there, I think that's, she said, I think Christine says something to the effect that if the
fast-paced narrative with beautifully drawn characters in an authentic and interesting small-town Colorado setting. Not only is a mystery compelling, but so are the characters. And even if there were no murders to solve, you'd still want to spend time with these fascinating people. And that's Christine Carbo, author of The Wild Inside. That's how I felt as well. The murder, obviously, that was a big thing, and that was a big murderers, you know, page turner. And I thought, well, it's a great way to get them all together. But I really enjoyed reading the characters as much as trying to figure out the murder
and
mystery.
I think that Margaret Cole just finished... I think it was her 20th book, the last one. Hers happened on the Indian reservation in Wyoming, around Lander, Wyoming. The main character is a Catholic priest, and the other character is a Native American woman who's a lawyer in this small town. Through these 20 books, there's been this subtle sexual tension between the characters. And sometimes I picked up the next one, not so much for the murder, but to see where these characters are going. And I think that... that's what makes books real to us, is the people in them.
Yeah, I agree. I think Chase being in that town is the real power of the book. I think, you know, we said in the other interview how sort of like the gang from high school is all back together. But in this book, what it took to get them back together was the murder. Otherwise, Chase would have snuck into town,
did a little hunting, did a little business,
and would have left. And they might not have known he was even there. So you had to get them together, and this was a great way to do it. But now that they are together... and you could move forward, then it seems like maybe you could have other kinds of intrigue, perhaps.
I'm hoping.
Are you a fan of, I mean, obviously you spoke about the authors that you like and so many mystery writers as well, but what about watching mystery? I mean, is it a very different experience as a mystery writer when you're watching, say, a TV series or a murder mystery or, you know, cop procedural on TV? Because are you able to watch that and enjoy it, or are you getting into analytical mode? It's like, how have they set up this plot? How is this being revealed?
I think I watch for the way they tell the story. And one of the best ways on regular network TV is where they put the commercials. So you can build to a point and they go to a break, but, you know, I tried, maybe some small sense, to have that rhythm, that bringing a character to a point where what's going to happen to him next, breaking and going with somebody else. And, now we all, you know, what do we call it, Devo it, so we can fast forward through the commercials, but still, I think there's a rhythm in that. That's what I've enjoyed most. That's what I see. And I still watch... the Turner channel for the old movies and the old mysteries. I think there's a value to that. Yeah,
it's fun. You know, mysteries, it's funny what you said about commercials, because I sometimes feel it, you know, I've talked about this before, but my daughter loves Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And so, but we watch Scooby-Doo on DVD and there's no commercials. And so they're about to fall into the water or something and, you know, to perish. And instead of getting a commercial, it kind of fades out, and it fades right back. And you actually notice that now the hook that's going to drop him into the river is 10 feet higher than it was before you went into commercial. And you didn't have those 2 minutes to like, what's going to happen, you know? And so sometimes I think, you know, the commercials weren't always a bad thing for the timing of these things. And I do think what you said about your book, you do a great job, because you're going from different characters telling these stories. And just as Birdie is coming to some very tense moment, you switch to Ray Ray's perspective or Mercy's perspective. And we have to wait a little bit to get back to Birdie. And I think that when you talk about page turning and reading 100 pages in a day of this book, that's part of the reason why. because you need to, like, I just got to see what happens to Birdie next, but that's not going to happen for 15 pages.
Yeah.
Did you work with an editor on this?
I wrote the book, and then I'd attended some different writers' conferences where you can get opportunities to sit down with either agents or editors, and I'd done roundtables with an editor from Tor who really liked the book, and I was getting just really good feedback. And at that point, I had intended on putting it on the shelf for 6 or 8 months and then coming back and going through it. And at that point, I, because of, I thought we had something, I did hire a content editor that, read through the book and came back with continuity issues and, questioned some things and said, let's move some stuff around. Of what she, of what she did, I probably maybe around 50%, I thought, was what I wanted to do. Then my agent read through the book. We made a few more changes. Then she had started submitting it to some different presses, and we were on the phone talking about something one day, and I can't remember which one of us brought up this Hillerman contest had seen it. And she said, you ought to enter this. And or I said that to her. I asked a question, but whatever it was. And, we had plenty of time. It wasn't like the contest was closing in a few days. And so I got, and you had to send in hard copy, not a digital file, of the whole book. So I had to go print up 300 and some pages and then mail it to New Mexico. And I remember telling my wife, that's going to cost like $50 by the time I get this printed. And I'm so glad I wasn't stingy.
I mean, good cost outlay there. Yeah. I mean, the reason I asked that was, I wonder if you are a writer, in the mystery genre, and you work with an editor, are there ever conversations about, how about we change this completely and have this person as the murderer? But obviously that wasn't part of this process.
Not this time. I do, I'm a member of Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, which is a group of, I think the membership's about 500 people in Colorado. Of that, probably 150, maybe 200 are traditionally published. There's a good number that are self-published now. But I regularly sit with one of their critique groups where we read 10 pages of each other's stuff, and critique. And that really is a good way to get graded on your, I'm getting 4 or 5 opinions every week on the 10 pages that I bring in. And some people just see, just because of the dynamics of our group, some people just see that 10 pages. Some people have a continuity of the story. And we bounce ideas back and forth about stuff. But everything I've written, I've pretty much had the storyline in my head, some of the subplots and how we're going to get there develop as I'm writing. But,
One of the characters I really liked, who's definitely very much behind the scenes, but not really at the forefront. And as we said, we love, so many of the characters here. Doyle, he's one of the Colorado Bureau of Investigators. So he's there, and he seems to have the whole thing sussed out, not necessarily knowing who did it, but he seems to know the setup with the sheriff and how he's, not such a cool guy, and who's good, who's bad, and he doesn't say much, but he likes to sip in his Diet Coke. I mean, why did you have a character like that? Because you seem to be the person who's has an overview, not the conscious, the conscience, but the Greek chorus in some ways.
In Colorado, these small counties will call for help if there's something that's beyond their scope, and certainly this county, 4 murders happening in this rapid thing would be something that they didn't have the experience with or the manpower. So they would call on Colorado Bureau of Investigation to send in help. And so I wanted him to be the opposite, where everybody else is very emotional. He is the guy that's, we're just going to work through every piece of evidence, talk to everybody, and build the theory of what's happened. Now, the story takes place, basically from a dawn at Saturday morning and is over at midnight on Sunday night. So what he's trying to compress, the story outruns him, but he's the one that now that comes in as this outsider and recognizes the dynamics of what the sheriff is very politically motivated, that maybe that it's a grudge between the sheriff and Chase, that Chase isn't, while they're trying to make this coincidence that he's there when the bad stuff happens, he's the one that says, no, something else is here. So yeah, and you know, he's buttoned up, he's got a buttoned up shirt, and he's at home with his technology. Yeah, I mean, and where everybody else was at home with the nature.
There are so many characters in this. Were there other characters that there just wasn't room to have in, that they would have just taken off in too many other directions?
We took a character out. Actually, I was the editor from Minotaur. We had another character that he said, no, let's pull this out. It's going to create too many other things that people will want to know about. And it was going to be Birdie's roommate.
Oh,
and it was then was this question whether Birdie was a relationship between there, or were they just roommates? He said, no, let's not open that one.
Save that for another book.
Yeah.
One character I wanted to ask you about was Cecil.
Yeah.
He is this guy who he works at the gas station, and he is just a rumor monger. And whether if he has a rumor, he runs with it, and if he doesn't have a rumor, he makes something up. He has no compulsion.
Yeah, he'll lie when the truth would be better.
And in this situation, it has real consequences, you know, and his actions are, you know, get called into question because there's murders going on. But what was the thinking to have a character like that? Again, this character with a different view on things who isn't necessarily directly involved.
But. Well, he brings a couple of clues in because he's seen. You know, he's seen Jimmy and the coach. He's one of the last people that sees Jimmy and coach before the murders. And we had to follow their timeline where they were going. And so, you know, where would you stop in the small town? Well, I call it town pump. It's the convenience store gas station. And that's, you know, where Birdie stops for her hostess fruit pie every morning. Marty stops for Slim Jims and Mountain Dew as the days go on. So they know he's a liar. And when he throws this stuff up, he's self-important and stuff like that. And when he throws this up, they have to say, is he lying again or might he have something? So I just thought, and then he was fun to write.
He kind of gets his comeuppance at the end.
Yeah.
There's a brief mention to about Matt kind of in relation to him. It's very, very brief. And I know that that's an issue that certainly has been, you know, plaguing small towns, not just in Colorado, but really around the country. I mean, was that something you felt like, let me just throw this in because it'll be kind of an authentic, reference to what's happening in small town America?
Certainly. And it's never really clear. Is he the meth dealer in town? Certainly we know he helps the kids get, the high school kids get beer when they need it, you know, out the back door, the convenience store and stuff like that. But you know, and, you know, with Cecil, he's self-important. Maybe he was just blowing that up.
Well, we have been enjoying speaking with author Kevin Wolfe about his new book, The Home Place, which is a mystery, and it's the winner of the Tony Hillerman Prize. He's been our guest on After Hours at the Book Club. What reaction are you getting?
It's good reception.
I mean, have you gone to towns like the one featured in the book?
No, I haven't gone there. No, I haven't. In fact, I just sent an email. My relatives are from Kit Carson, Colorado. That's where the homestead, the family homestead was. I just sent an email to the school down there and the principal and said, can I donate a book for your library? I haven't heard back from them yet. My cousins that grew up down there have enjoyed the book and talked and there's been people that have talked about the realism of the plains, that they thought I did a good job with that. And the small town, the dynamics of the small town, the church and the gas station where people meet at the diner and stuff like that played out. Yeah.
So what's next for you? You mentioned you're working on maybe a possible sequel. How actively are you working on that? Do you have a timeline? What's your vision here?
I'm actually under contract with a small press for a two-book series, and it's totally different than this. It's kind of an urban fantasy, but the urban area is an 1880s Colorado mining town, and it's a very traditional voice Western, but the bad guy is a werewolf. And instead of a gunfight at high noon, the showdown happens at midnight with six shooters loaded with silver bullets. We had trouble. It's a book that I finished in 2009, and the first book that my agent signed me because of that. And we just had trouble placing it because it's so traditionally Western, but so, and you know, with the guy in, you know, polyester Levi's and a bolo tie, put up with the paranormal elements, and then with the urban fantasy people, would they want to ride the slow horse through town? But I think with Stephen King's book, that they're making into a movie this year. It's that kind of that Western theme of apocalypse.
Oh, The Gunslinger?
The Gunslinger.
The Gunslinger, yeah.
And I think because of the timing of that, we got to look at it. It's a small press, and we're just now getting to the point where we'll get a timeline on that. Because it was the Hillerman Prize, it was a one book. It wasn't for a series of books. And the editor that worked with me on that has actually left and gone to another press. We've got about 150 pages of the sequel in some kind of form that we're hoping to show to them at some point here.
I think it'd make a cracking TV series as well.
Mm-hmm.
My agent, is where they're shopping, they always do. That'd be fun.
We shall see. But we'll have you back on, hopefully, for the werewolf book. We've had werewolves on in the past in the Radio Book Club, and they've been very popular. So we shall see. But author Kevin Wolfe has been our guest on After Hours at the Book Club, the podcast. It's a collaboration between KGNU Radio and the Boulder Bookstore. Check out our Book Club podcast with Kevin Wolfe, talking a little bit more about The Home Place. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And as always, my co-host has been Arsene Kashkashian of the Boulder Bookstore. I've been your host as well, Maeve Conran. Thanks, Arsene.
Thank you.